Hey everyone, and thanks for listening to Lit Radio Podcast. This is Teja, your host. Today, I'm joined by Anthony Tesgau, or as he prefers to be called, Taz. We will talk about his latest title, The Consumer Behavior Book, exploring the reasons why emotions are so important in decision-making. Taz is a man of many lanyards, trainer, author, TEDx speaker, brand and communications strategist, and lecturer. In the Consumer Behavior Book, Taz uses behavior economics as the foundation to explain the anomalies in consumer choices and what really influences human behavior, preferences, and decision-making. Hi Taz, it's a great pleasure to have you with us once again on the Lit Radio Podcast. This time, the reason for that is your latest book, The Consumer Behavior Book. So first of all, could you tell us why you decided to write it?
Thanks, Teja. Yeah, it's. I often say that if you're starting to write a book, if you've got a reason to be annoyed or angry or irritated by something, it's a good place to start. And as an ad agency planner, I worked in ad agencies for many years. I was always very annoyed when it came to creating advertising campaigns, brand strategies, positionings for clients. And we would come up with a sort of strategy, we'd come up with some ads. And then I'd have a client who'd say something like, well, I don't really like this because she's wearing red, or you haven't said the brand name often enough. And I think this is mad. This is all very subjective, what I call the tyranny of subjectivity. So I thought, wouldn't it be great if there was a theory that could actually help us all out, clients, agencies, creatives, planners? And I heard about this thing called behavioral economics and thought, okay, this sounds quite promising. And it was all very academic and it was written by these psychologists. But I read about it and thought, this is something we should all be doing in advertising and branding and comms. So I basically started using it as a planner in ad agencies, and then I started doing training on it. And I'm still surprised now how relatively few people in the business know about behavioral economics. So I thought, right, I'll write another book on it. I'll actually try and pin it down. Because one of the people who wrote in advanced praise, who's an ex-colleague of mine, he described behavioral economics as a very hot topic, but no one can agree what it is. So I thought, a bit like the previous book with Insight, okay, if no one can agree what it is, I'll have a go. So that was really the reason I started sort of writing it down, sort of get it out of my system and maybe help other people understand what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a very interesting topic. But in the book, you say that too much of the business world, especially sales, marketing, communications and research, has been moored to an outdated model of human behavior. So Taz, what is that model and why do you think it's outdated?
And also, why does it annoy me? That's precisely the problem. And the other aspect of me being irritated was spending all my time with clients and often, you know, agency people who should know better, saying, oh, well, we need to convince people, we need to persuade people to drive a Peugeot or stop smoking or drink Evian. And I would say, what do you mean by that? I said, oh, we have to persuade them with giving them lots of facts. I thought, well, who says that's the best way to do it? Because if anyone who's listening has children, you know that you don't convince your children to do what to do by telling them facts. And I just kept thinking, why is this the case? And it occurred to me that the business world, as you said, had this model, which either they knew and agreed with, or it was just sort of simply there, which is we need to convince rational consumers by giving them rational messages so they act rationally according to what we want them to do. And even then, I just thought, I don't think this is the right model. What other models are available? And again, I think once I got into reading about behavioral economics and Daniel Kahneman, Amos Tversky, and Thaler and Sunstein, they talked about actually influence and persuasion doesn't work that way. It is much more about influencing emotions and talking to what they call system one. And yet this model still exists, and it exists, and it's partly because economists, classical economists, sorry to any classical economists listening, going to be horrible about you now. They have this model, which again is what caused or helped cause the crash in 2007 and 8. And it's dismantled in the film The Big Short, by the way. They have this model that that's what people do. People act solely rationally in their own interest. And behavioral economics came along and looked at the brain and said, actually, not, that's just not how brains behave. Brains don't spend all their time making the best decision. They spend their time making the most effortless decision. So this model that we used to have in place, or business world had in place, and still lingers, that's what I've been trying to attack along with other people, and that's what I've sort of focused on in the book.
Yeah, so whether we want to admit it or not, we tend to not act rationally but emotionally.
It is, and I think I've literally this morning just been doing training for a client. And I said to them, look, you know, we all know this is true in our lives. And yet in the business world, we pretend, we maintain this illusion that everything is factual and rational and perfect, because it's easy to do that. All we have to do is just put out some facts. But in it they don't work. And having worked with brands and communications, you look at the evidence and they just don't affect people's behavior.
Absolutely. And in the book, you say that we need a theory on consumer behavior. But before we discuss that in more depth, yeah, of course, you say that theory needs to be based on behavioral economics. But you describe that as weird and wonderful. So why do you think behavioral economics are weird and wonderful?
Yeah, I have to be careful when I'm training for different organizations because they don't like me saying that. I have to call it an introduction to behavior because it's a bit, you know. But I like calling it weird and wonderful because it's weird in the sense that actually it shows human beings for what we are. There's a great comment, which I think is in this book or one of the earlier books, by an American psychologist called Jeffrey Miller. And apologies for a sort of language. He says human beings are praise-starved flattery sluts. We like to do what makes us feel good. And he's absolutely right. So that's, again, another reason why behavioral economics is sort of weird but true, because it says, you know, we will do things to fit in, we'll do things to look good or make ourselves look, which we know, you know, you look at social media, you look at whatever. But it explains an awful lot more of our decisions than, you know, this rational economic theory. So it's quite weird in the sense that it's challenging and disruptive. You know, my client this morning, I won't say who they are, but you know, they work in sort of home appliances and stuff, and they like talking about new products, new ranges, and for them it's, look, we've just introduced this and it's an air fryer or it's a microwave. And I'm saying, okay, that's just not, if you just tell people, they're going to go, yep, and it will go into what I call attention spam. So you have to think of ways of just disrupting the way that communication works. So one of the things that I do like, and I write about it in the book and I do it in my training, is it allows you to be weird and different. And brands and communication has to be different to stand out because there is so much content. And most of it is very dull, and most of it is very uniform. So I always think that behavioral economics gives creative people permission to be a bit more weird and creative and different. And that's why I think it's quite wonderful.
So, is that why you think that behavioral economics should be the key to a new theory on consumer behavior?
Yeah, I come at it from a number of angles. One, as I've just said, is we need a theory. And there's a whole section at the beginning of the book. You know, why do we need theories? Because if we don't have theories, as I say, everything just becomes subjective. You know, I like this, I don't like that, this works, that doesn't work. Mention the brand 100 times in 30 seconds, make the logo. So at least if you've got some sort of theory or principles, it means that you don't have this, as I say, terribly sort of subjective. You can at least say, well, we think this is going to be more effective and more influential. And especially from my former role in ad agencies, I'd be the bridge between clients and creatives, and it would be nice to say, let's all share the same language. Let's all agree that it's not just about indoctrinating people with facts. We're going to try and create an emotional connection. And with one of my other hats, as you know, Taya, storytelling. Stories are a great way as well of bringing emotions to life. So it's really a way of saying, okay, let's get everyone to agree a sort of language or an agenda or a set of principles, which will also make for a better relationship between agencies and clients. So though all those things together really are why I think it's important that we have a theory. And behavioral economics, plus a few other bits and pieces that I've thrown in, I think is the best place to start, to be honest.
Yeah, it would be really great if we all have a structure that we can just follow. Okay, so in the book, you mentioned 6 key principles from behavioral economics that we should take into account when it comes to consumer behavior. So, of course, today we won't have the time to discuss all of them, but I have some questions for at least some of them. The first one is thinking beyond rationality. So, thus, why is that vital?
Thinking beyond rationality is, again, we think about rationality and thinking. And there's a great quote in the book, which I think I'm going to mention at the launch, actually, by Jonathan Swift, who wrote Gulliver's Travels, which makes him now the second most famous Swift in history. And he says, human beings, and there's a bit of Latin here, which I'm not, everyone who knows me, I'm sorry, more Latin. He says human beings are capax rationis, which means capable of rationality. And I like that. He says we're capable of it. Doesn't mean we use it. We're capable of it. And I think the trouble with, as I said before, is so much communication and brand stuff only relies on rationality, as if all we are doing is broadcasting facts like into a computer, and the computer makes the best possible decision. That's just not how brains work. As I just said, emotions are far more important than that. Memory affects emotions and rationality. So I'm not saying that rationality has no role to play, because that wouldn't be right either. But in behavioral economics terms, we have system one and system two. So system two is the rational conscious process, which is the factual side of it, if you like. And system one is unconscious and emotional and implicit. So to sort of simplify all of that, you really need both. You do need your facts, but the facts come after. We say post-rationalized. So you have an emotional connection, again, often through the vehicle of a story. You create that emotional visceral reaction, one of the big 6 emotions, happiness, sadness, fear, anger, surprise, disgust. And then once you've created that emotion, then the facts come in and validate that emotion. So thinking beyond rationality is a deliberate sort of play on words, because thinking is not just. A scientist, I think I've mentioned in the book, David Bohm says, you're not thinking, you're just being rational. Because scientists know that thinking is not simply rational. Thinking is imagining. Scientists are constantly imagining what if, again, a story. And it's not the same as rationality. So that's the place where I sort of start, really.
Fascinating. And the next principle is that we are mostly unconscious. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, you mentioned the word weird. That is one of the weird things that I say. It's a quote, actually. I found a headline in Time magazine online about the brain, and it says, why you are mostly unconscious. And you look at that and you think, that sounds very strange. And it doesn't mean that we're asleep, but it does mean that most of what we do and most of our decisions happen unconsciously. Now, scientists can't put a figure on it because there are too many decisions, but maybe something like 80, 90% of the decisions we make are not conscious. They're happening on a path, on a rhythm, on a routine, because our brain unconsciously says to us, don't worry about this, I'll get on with it. You get on with, you know, the business of whatever you're doing. I'll make sure that, you know, you don't put your hand in the fire. Or I'll make sure that you just choose the same cup of tea, which makes sense, because the brain runs, again, on effortlessness. It doesn't want to spend energy. So there's another term called automaticity, which means the brain wants to turn everything it can, which is effortful, and system two, and turn it into what is effortless and unconscious. So an awful lot of things that we do, the places that we like, the places we drive to, what we get up in the morning and wear or doing our teeth, these are unconscious. They're unconscious routines. And again, the scientists, the psychologists say that it's far more important and far more prevalent than we like to admit. So this notion that we are constantly sitting there making conscious decisions and choices, most of the time we're not. Most of those things happen, as I say, automatically, rhythmically, and just sort of beneath the surface. And again, it just makes sense for the brain. So that's again why I talk about us being mostly unconscious.
Yeah, that's very interesting. But what does it mean about marketers? I mean, how can we promote products when we know people are mostly unconscious?
That's a good point. And I think one of the ethical issues, because I think I mentioned ethics a bit in the book, because when they wrote Nudge, Richard Thaler and Cass Sunstein, they worked with Obama in the American government, and they were looking at largely sort of public policy. And they talked about benign paternalism, which is one of those expressions you think, okay. One person's benign paternalism is another person's dictatorship. But what they were saying is, okay, people often don't do what is in their best interests. So saving money or driving more care, whatever. So that's how they were using it. So the way that I approach that is rather than trying to convince people consciously, you know, don't drive too fast, you might kill somebody. Don't eat the wrong foods, you'll have an unhealthy diet. Don't smoke too much. Don't. It's got to go just beyond a parade of facts. So if you're addressing the unconscious, you're addressing the emotions, you're making people feel something about not smoking, not driving too quickly, etc. So for me, that's the way that just in the book, but also in when I'm doing training, I'll get people to think about, okay, this is the way that you're going to influence people. And some clients find it, well, hang on, this is a bit, again, a bit weird. I'm used to just giving people facts. But I think once you start looking at the theory and the evidence, it makes sense to say that this is an equally, if not more powerful way of getting people to change their behavior.
Fascinating. Thanks for that. And now, as I'll move to the next principle, and here you ask why emotions matter. So we all know that they matter, but why?
Yeah, occasionally people say to me, oh, I know about emotions. They don't have to tell me about it. And then I look at their website or look at their communication. I go, really? You understand emotions? Because again, it's just a whole, I was looking at a client's website a couple of weeks ago, and it's just loads of drop-down menus and loads of facts and loads of bullet points. No one's going to read this. No one's. So you have to create an emotional connection. Because otherwise, our brains just, you know, filter it out and switch off. But the other part of the answer goes back to evolution. And again, I write about it in the book and I talk about it in the training because people say to me, oh, emotions, they're just sort of, you know, just a little bit of an afterthought. Well, they're not, they're absolutely key because evolution designed emotions to make sure that we survive as a species, that we don't leave the gene pool. So the whole point we have these emotions individually and as a species is to make sure that we survive and thrive and pass on our genes. So classically, tens of thousands of years ago, if we're in the middle of a forest and we see a bear, we don't sit there and think, well, I wonder what species of bear is it? You know, is it going to be friendly? Is it going to? We run because evolution sends fear. We run. It's not necessarily fight or flight, it's a slightly different. But it is emotion. So emotions are absolutely core to our identity and to our survival. So when occasionally people say to me, well, yeah, but they're not that important. They are. They absolutely are. In fact, I mean, again, that the scientists in the field say, you know, there is no single decision that we take that doesn't have some emotional component. So there are all sorts of, you know, quotes about, you know, why emotions matter so much and why they are so important. And I think that's really core again to the whole sort of theme of the book, which is not to underestimate emotions because they really, really work, especially, again, going back to communication, especially in arresting attention. They grab our attention. So this morning, again, I showed some posters of disgust using sort of disgusting images. And I occasionally take pictures of my delegates, and they're all pulling the same faces. And what that means is that's having that effect on their face, the muscles, and the muscles send a message to the brain. The brain goes, why are you doing that? Ah, that's disgust. And then the brain goes, why are you feeling disgust? Oh, it's because we've just seen this image of a horrible, moldy burger. So the whole point is that our brain works with emotion, facial expressions, and then it decodes into sort of why we're feeling these emotions. So that's the sort of path that I like to put sort of emotion in. And again, I like to think of it as a way of turning into sort of, you know, famous or motivating communications and brands.
Definitely. And we know that emotions are very important. But just to bring back this to marketers and to make it more practical for them, how can we create emotion for our customers with our marketing and our communications? And does it always have to be positive emotions, or negative emotions work as well?
That's a really good question, and I need about an hour for that one. So emotions, again, it's about understanding when you're designing, for example, creative briefs, which is something I used to still do, in fact. So working with clients, writing or getting a brief from a client, turning it into a creative brief and working with creative people and then presenting, you make sure that emotions are cool. You make sure that it's not just for clients, say, tell people we've got a sale, or tell people we've got a new improved yogurt with more fruit. Who cares? It's about what emotions you can build into that. So whether it's the brief that I give the creatives or whether it's how they work with the brief, you're always trying to create sort of an emotional response off the back of that, rather than, as I keep saying, just giving a sort of set of information. But the second question is a really big one, and it's something you've touched on, which is fascinating. There's a famous psychologist called Barbara Fredrickson who wrote a paper called What Good Are Positive Emotions? Because of the big six, happiness, sadness, fear, anger, surprise, disgust, most of them are negative. And that's for a reason, which is they are there to prevent us dying. So they're there to sort of stop things happening, like we don't get too angry, we get in a fight, we don't get killed by a bear. So firstly, it's important to understand why they are so many negative emotions. But again, when I'm doing exercises, and I talk about it in the book, often the negative emotions are the most creative ones. Because if every piece of communication is about happiness, everything would look the same. And most brands do that. Look, you know, drive our car, you'll be happy. You know, BMW, joy. Cadbury, happiness. But the trouble is everything would look the same. So often it's about using the negative emotions like fear or fear of missing out or anger. You'll be angry if you don't. So again, it's quite creative to look at the negative emotions in that way in terms of designing new brands or new communications or website. Because if everyone just does, this will make you happy, everything will look the same. And then, as I said before, everything will get ignored.
Definitely. Well, I'm not going to go into the remaining three principles. I would encourage our listeners to grab the book and read more about them and also the ones we've just discussed. But thus, at the end of the book, there is a chapter that's titled Towards a New Model. So do we actually have a new model to follow when it comes to consumer behavior?
I think so. I mean, there's a few things I've sort of just talked about, really. And a lot of it is to do with moving away from this sort of this rational actor model that everything is. So a lot of it is about identity. I know there's a lot of discussion about identity politics and all those sorts of things, but I do genuinely think that it's important to look at who we think we are. So try to create a sort of group or a tribe around the meaning of a brand. And I've talked about that in sort of some of the other books as well. I think one of the elements I talk about at the end is rather than this very linear, rational behavior, we do this, we do this. There's a whole bunch of sciences called the complexity sciences. So like the butterfly wings, which create a, and again, understanding that sometimes small moments or small details can actually affect big elements of human behavior. And again, just this morning, I was working with this client. We were talking about small details. Because often with brands that I work with, they'll look for a big overarching benefit that works across all different audiences and all different markets and cultures. And the problem with that is that sometimes you end up with something which is nothing. It's diluted to the point of meaninglessness, like a lowest common denominator. So often I'll say, actually, what might be more important is a small moment or a small emotion or a small touch point that people can relate to, or it can actually engage their emotions. So I think something that replaces the let's come up with a big overarching brand benefit with something that is small and personal and human, again, possibly even a story, is, I think, a good way of replacing that sort of part of the theory. And what else? I think one of the things I have said is the nature of research as well. I think it's really important to think about how we replace market research or we come up with a better type of market research, which again isn't just talking to the rational part of the brain. So an awful lot of research is again very factual. Why did you buy this? What do you think of this? Very system two. So part of my model is looking at other ways of getting answers from people, consumers. So whether it's using stories, whether it's using gamification, whether it's getting to do people do projection, imagine this, tell a what if story. So all of those things for me, again, are using the principles of behavioral economics and creating a new model which we can again put into practice to use research and use marketing in a more successful manner. So those are just two or three of the elements of the model. I think people should read the book for the rest of it.
Yeah, they definitely should. But thank you very much, Tas, for your time today. It was really interesting conversation for me and hopefully for our listeners. And of course, I encourage them to grab a copy of the Consumer Behavior book to read more because there is a lot of other insights there. But yeah, thank you very much for your time.
Pleasure, Taya. And yeah, hopefully anyone else who wants to ask any questions, there'll be links and I'm very happy to answer any outstanding questions, because I'm sure there'll be a lot of them.
Fabulous. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.